Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape Drive Time. Yes, it is Budget 2018 special. And what's happened is the Finance Minister, Maluleke Ngaba, has delivered his budget, but he's gone over our allocated time. He had over 8,000 words and 26 pages to read, and he's got through it. But in studio with me to help us understand the budget, I've got Maher Jukut, investment analyst, Old Mutual Al Baraka Equity Fund, Abdul Aziz Davids, head of research, Kagiso Asset Management, Munya Chona from Oasis, and Musa Akudia from Oasis. Musa is a tax expert. Gentlemen, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Voice of the Cape.
Thank you, Shafiq.
Right, I'm going to start off with Maher, you're in studio, and then I will go down the list. Just first off the bat, what do you take away from the budget? And gentlemen, you can say, you can agree and say the same things if you want to, but Maher, what do you take away from this budget? It was a difficult one. Maluleke Ngaba was in a straitjacket, but he got through it.
Yeah, so for me it was about education, really. I wanted to see what was going to happen there. And then as well as the SA growth, the economic growth, debt levels in terms of the debt to GDP, how that was going to be combated. And tax and VAT, I think, were the big ones. Foreign investment as well.
Right. Abdul Aziz Davids, Kagiso, what are your takeaways from the budget?
Yeah, I think, shukran for the opportunity, Shafiq. I think one of the big things that overshadowed this budget is obviously the looming Moody's sort of rating decision that will be announced in March. And as Maher said, I think one of the key focus areas was what was going to happen to the debt ceiling in terms of, if you look at back at the medium-term budget statement late last year, that was expected to exceed 60%. So he's basically pulled the rabbit out of the hat here in terms of managing to rein in that number to around 56% by 2020. So I think that will give the rating agencies a lot of comfort. And as a result, we are seeing the rand strengthening. We're seeing our government bonds doing particularly well today. And clearly for the man in the street, it does have potentially quite significant positive implications, especially if we can avert that ratings downgrade by Moody's. So I think that's probably the overshadowing sort of aspect of this budget. But I think, you know, moreover, a lot of what is done, they, for example, reallocated the expenditure. So clearly with the higher education issues around the free higher education, that's been allocated about 35 billion rand. So they needed to reallocate expenditure, and they've managed to do that. The single biggest surprise is probably the VAT increase, the 1% VAT increase. But even with that, we expected some additional form of wealth taxes, for example, which hasn't materialized. And I think overall, quite a pragmatic sort of approach to the whole budgeting process, both in terms of the allocation of expenditure and also the revenue-raising exercises that he's announced as well.
Munya from ASIS, what is your takeaway package from the 2018 budget?
Thank you, Shafiq. Thank you for having us on the show. I think from where we sit, it was a good budget to start off with. There were a number of different stakeholders in our view that were actually paying attention to this budget. And we think it was a watershed budget in terms of restoring confidence in the stability of public finances going forward as a country. Like what my colleague has said, I think one of the most important aspects that everybody was paying attention to was the Moody's review that's going to come in the couple of weeks. And we think, in our view, that this budget actually averts what seemed to be an impending country downgrade. If I say that it's a good budget, but I think it only provides a foundation for stability. We still need to see more in terms of growth-enhancing policies and also good governance, business and consumer confidence to actually take us out of this low growth cycle that we are in at the moment.
And Moose, I'm going to come to you. I know you are the legal compliance and tax guy, but from that particular standpoint, what do you think is the biggest takeaway in terms of your arena of expertise?
Thank you. Look, I think given the revenue shortfall, we all suspected that there would be increased revenue-creating mechanisms, and that really comes through, by and large, through the increase in the VAT. You know, it's the first time that VAT's been increased in 25 years. I think it's been a difficult budget because of the significant amount of additional revenue required, about 36 billion that was required to be raised. And hopefully going forward, we'll see a stronger economic growth, which would preclude any further, you know, raising of VAT and other taxes. So this budget was really concerned with closing the budget deficit, and hopefully in the next budget we'll see a more focus, more of a focus on and the results of eliminating ineffective and wasteful expenditure.
Gentlemen, one thing that came out strongly from the budget, I think, was the introduction by the minister. He spent a lot of time contextualizing everything, and out of it came Cyril speak: confidence, new dawn, year of change, improving confidence, ethical leadership, urgency, running while others are working, and then mentions of state capture, stronger rand, favorable, another word coming up. And saying it's a tough but hopeful budget. Interesting language used. Mahir, just very quickly, as an investment analyst, what do you make of the actual language that was used by Mulusi Gigaba? Is he saying things in the right way? Maybe if that's what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, I think that Cyril was very busy this weekend, and I think that they definitely got together to try and have a look at how they address the budget. I think that you can't have, if I can just make an analogy here, you can't have the CEO saying one thing at Sona and then you have the CFO trying to spend the money somewhere else. I think there's got to be some synergy, and I think that was brought through quite positively.
Abdulaziz, I'm going to carry on with this. Do you think, Mahir says there was a synergy, would you agree that there was a synergy between Sona itself is very thematic. Do you think that we are seeing the kind of synergy that is going to make people in Moody's not reach for their pills?
Yeah, I think one has to see this budget in the context of the medium-term budget statement that was issued late last year. That was very downbeat. It was almost fatalistic in terms of its approach. And clearly, a key feature of this budget compared to the MTBS is the deconsolidation measures. Admittedly, that's sort of 2 years or 3 years out, 2022. But clearly, in terms of the expectations, I think one key metric to look at is just the GDP growth numbers. So that's been revised upwards, for example. So that clearly shows you that, you know, as Cyril mentioned, you know, the green shoots are around. So I think the expectation is that, in contrast to the Zuma era, so in the Zuma era, National Treasury every year, they present a budget, the next 2 years, they've got a debt consolidation number that looks better than the current number. But then in the subsequent years, those numbers just get worse and worse and worse. I think the key difference here would be that there is an expectation that actually things can actually improve much better than what is presented in this budget, especially in the outer years, around 2021, 2022. And I think that's a key, a hallmark of Cyril and his approach as well.
If you just tuned in, we are broadcasting. It's a special Voice of the Cape Drive Time budget broadcast. We're going to cut away for the news, and after the news, we're going to be talking to Munya Chona and Musa Akuria from Oasis about their views on various aspects of the budget. Our other guests, Mahir Jakut from Old Mutual and Abdulaziz Davids from Kagiso. Stay with us. We're not going away.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape Drive Time, welcome back. I'm Shafiq Morton, and it's our Budget 2018 Special Edition. In studio with us, Maher Jakut, Investment Analyst, Old Mutual Al Baraka Equity Fund, Abdulaziz Davids, Head of Research, Kahisa Asset Management, Munya Chona, Investment Analyst at Oasis, Musa Akudia, Legal Compliance and Tax Expert at Oasis. Munya, to get to you, let's jump to the issue of so-called free education. 57 billion rand over 3 years, that's about 19 billion rand per annum. That's a massive chunk out of our budget, isn't it?
Yes. From a monetary perspective, it might seem like a lot, but if you're looking at a global scale, the way that countries become competitive is by building the human capital skill, and with the way that the global village is now, if you don't have a highly skilled workforce, you actually lag behind in terms of development. So if you were to ask me, I would say it is a significant amount, but if we are to look into the future and how South Africa positions itself in the global sphere, it's a necessary amount that needs to be spent.
Musa, let's have a look at the tax landscape. Finance Minister is telling us 36 billion rand in VAT and personal tax. I think a 22 extra billion rand coming in from VAT. And also saying, I think, that the lower levels of taxpayers not getting an increase in tax. What do you make, generally speaking, of the whole tax landscape and the changes?
Look, I think that the budget it's a balanced budget. You know, there's increases in taxes which apply across the board. So, for example, on the increased fuel levy, which will obviously affect all households, as well as the VAT increase. But then, on the other hand, it is sort of counterbalanced by, for example, as you just mentioned now, the free education for first year students for 2018 and then rolling out to, you know, second year students in 2019, which reduces the pressure on lower income households, coupled with the, you know, the increase in tax brackets for lower income households, and also the increase in the social grants for the more vulnerable in our society, for the aged and orphaned. So, you know, there is a balanced approach to it, and, you know, from our perspective, we just need to, you know, sort of caution against, you know, the continual increase in taxes, you know, and placing an increased burden on the existing tax base. So, you know, as I mentioned before, what, you know, the focus going forward should also be on, you know, on the reduction of and elimination of ineffective and wasteful expenditure. But I think all in all, it's a balanced budget. You know, there are pros and cons to it, but, yeah, like I said, a balanced budget all in all.
Maya, to get to you, some people would say that one of the cons of the budget, for example, is 52 cents increase in the fuel levy, and some people might argue about VAT, although the minister did give a rationale that VAT had last been increased in 1993. What do you make of all of that?
Look, I think the increase in VAT was the big surprise, as Abdulaziz mentioned, and I think that, but because of the increase in the social grants, I think that that's where you have the poor still being able to afford, and then on the zero rate foods staying the same, I think that was the only way that they could go.
Abdulaziz Davids, to get to you, we didn't hear much of radical economic transformation and very little of WMC, white monopoly capital, but there was one interesting sentence where the minister said the structure of the economy must be transformed radically. What do you make of this topic, which has become quite a sensitive one in certain quarters?
Yeah, it's quite a difficult one because To be blunt, I mean, there's a lot of rhetoric and a lot of sort of sensationalism around RED And the reality is that in this budget, there isn't any evidence of that. On the contrary, I mean, they are allowing, for example, in terms of the offshore allowances for pension funds, for asset managers like ourselves, that's been increased by another 5%. So if you are going to go the RED route, you need to, RED is obviously radical economic transformation, you obviously need to effectively make it conducive to have that done. And I think this budget actually doesn't cater for it. One aspect of this budget, which is obviously, and my colleagues have touched on it briefly, is if you look at the composition of the expenditure, about 53% of expenditure effectively goes towards social spending. Mm-hmm. If you combine the learning and culture, for example, including the free higher education, combined with the health and social development, you effectively have 53% of the expenditure going to those sectors. And radical economic transformation for me means that you spend more on economic development, you spend more on infrastructure. And if you look at that $85 billion reallocation, for example, that's actually been taken from infrastructure spending. So it's difficult to see how that rhetoric has effectively translated in this budget. And I don't see any evidence of that.
Munya from Oasis, do you think that what is happening to our political leadership is that economic reality is in their faces, that you can't have a successful country if you haven't got a successful economy?
Yes, precisely. I think I'll put it in this way. For us to move as a country, there are basically three players in this game. We've got the government, we've got labor, and then we've got business. And all of these three players are actually bound together by creating a very conducive environment where confidence actually is high for people to make investment. And from a policy perspective, I think we should also bring to the fore that we do have an NDP that hasn't largely been implemented. And I think if these three players that I've mentioned are to come together, then in terms of having a lot of the rhetoric, more of the focus would actually be on the implementation. At the end of the day, the man on the street is mainly concerned about job creation. And I think if these three players that I've mentioned are all pulling in the same direction, then we can move forward as a country. We will be able to create sustainable job opportunities for our people.
I agree with that in terms of job opportunities, Shafiq, because mm-hmm. just in terms of countries that have higher unemployment rate, I mean, Malusi, he mentioned the 26%, which is quite high, and that comes from two things. It stems from two things. It's no economic growth, but I think that he covered a good sentiment story there. So I think that just on those GDP numbers, it's looking a lot better. But the other thing is that we don't actually have the skills that the business that businesses require. Now, just to give you some stats, the Ministry of Education celebrated a 75.1% pass rate for 2017. But what they don't realize is that about 45% of the students actually drop out before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then in terms of they looked at the stats in terms of grade 4 learners, 58% of them cannot read. So a large allocation of the budget actually goes to basic education, right, which is actually, in relative terms, higher than what the UK and US and even Germany spends. Now, yet we still were rated 138 out of 138, which is dead last for maths and science. And that's where I feel that Malusi Gigaba, together with Cyril, actually touched on the maths and science, and with Cyril there as a man of action, I think that's going to be great for the economy.
And I also know that Minister Naledi Pandor, who's been on the technical side, she was once education minister, is equally passionate about our maths literacy rates certainly increasing. Musa, to get to you, the man on the street is not going to be, it seems, too badly affected in terms of personal income tax, if I understand what I've heard. It seems as if a focus on the tax is going to be for the higher income earners, and that people in the lower income brackets are not going to be too badly affected in terms of personal income tax. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So what they've done in this budget is they've increased the brackets on the lower income earners, and the brackets for the higher income, the top three brackets, that's remained unchanged.
And is this a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think that this, in other words, is going to allow people on the lower end of the economic scale still to at least have some liquidity to cope with day-to-day pressures?
Yeah, look, I think it was necessary also, you know, given the increase in VAT. So like I said earlier, it was the intention was to sort of counterbalance the increase in VAT and the fuel levy, so that there is still, you know, more liquidity in the lower income households.
Mahir, one of the most unequivocal statements that I have picked up out of the budget was when the minister said the state must contain the public wage bill. Minister Pravin Gordhan has been going on about this for the last 2 to 3 years. What do you make of that? Is he serious?
Yeah, I think he is serious, and I think that that'll definitely be implemented, but I think it's the implementation is very important there, and I think that sticking to their word and like a man of action that Cyril Ramaphosa is, if I just look at what he did with the mining charter, I think if they implement it and they stick to their word, then we're in a good space.
And Abdul Aziz, it looks like Minister Zwani's mining charter is heading fast and serious for file 13, the rubbish bin. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think so, and I think the minister is nowhere to be found. I mean, he missed his deadline with the portfolio committee today, so they're actually launching an inquiry into him. So clearly we think that he's obviously massively compromised. So clearly with the court action that was supposed to start yesterday, that has several basically intervened, the president basically intervened, and he's asked both the Chamber of Mines and his counterparts in government to suspend all activity around that. So I do believe that the current charter is unworkable, and we are likely to see a much better version of the charter being promulgated in the not-too-distant future as well.
Munya from Oasis, we see a mention of small to medium businesses, $1.4 billion for high-potential SMMEs, a small business lever for creating jobs, $2.1 billion medium term for early startup phases, in other words, seed funding. Are these amounts of money enough to get the SMME section going, or is it a question of the bureaucracy has to be removed?
I think at the moment, if we look at our unemployment rate, which is roughly around 27%, I think it's not enough. But as the minister actually mentioned, is that it's one of the sectors that probably as a country we haven't paid much attention to. So in my view, I think it is a good start. But I think a lot can actually be done if we actually are to encourage the entrepreneurial spirit of our people to actually succeed. So in my view, I think a lot can still be done. But as a focus area, I think it highlights that it's one area that we could actually maybe try to utilize a little bit more as a cushion to our unemployment rate.
Musa, some good news coming out of the budget, or slightly good news, is that social welfare payments have been increased slightly and incrementally. Are they significant enough, do you think? I mean, I think it's 1,700 is the one number, and 400 rand for child benefits, if I'm correct. Not correct.
Well, that's correct. The increases are above inflation, so you know I think it's headed in the right direction. You know the amount we're talking about is not significant, but I think it does achieve the balancing approach that they've tried to achieve in this budget.
Let's get back to you, to Mahir, having a look at other issues in the budget. The finance minister spoke about the fact that certain staple foods would still be zero rated. How critical would you say that is to ensuring that the poor do not become poorer.
Yeah, so, I mean, so the VAT, the increase in the VAT that was a surprise will affect everyone.
Absolutely.
Right? So how do you get the poor not to have that impact?
Mm.
Right? And I think that was the only way to do it.
Yeah. Abdulaziz, what do you make of that? I know a lot of people are going to be talking about the increase in VAT because it does affect everybody. How do you think that's going to affect the poor? Because the budget has tried as best as it can, I think, to try and protect the poor of our country, who are a vast majority.
Yeah, that's right. I think one has to understand that VAT clearly is levied on, as the name says, a value-added tax. So if you look at a Mercedes, for example, the VAT on a Mercedes is much higher than the VAT on, you know, a basic food item, for example. And we know disproportionately the poor spend the bulk of the budget or the monthly income on basic necessities. So by definition, and there's a stat that I saw, that 85% of VAT is actually on more higher-valued goods, as you would expect. So I think, you know, for all its sins, VAT is actually a very good tax in the sense that, you know, the high-income earners and the people that have more disposable income tend to pay a lot more VAT. Also, we have to understand that the collection mechanism of VAT is very efficient. You've got the cycles, all the retailers, their systems are set up, etc. So if you're ever going to look to raise money quite quickly, VAT is probably the ideal way of doing that. Linked to that, I think, obviously more pertinently, one of the big assumptions in this budget is that our household consumption will start to increase. So they've got a forecast here going from 1.3% to about 2.3% by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to discourage consumption as well. So we actually thought that, and there was a camp that thought that they could actually hike that by 2%, given that it hasn't been increased for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that a 1% has been, while it did come as a surprise, it is a pragmatic approach. And I don't think that the poor disproportionately will be worse off compared to the middle class or the upper income earners.
And Munya, the finance minister, spoke about 6 special economic zones where people could be offered tax benefits to open businesses. What do you make of that? It wasn't very specific, but it was mentioned.
Yes. I think it's one of the prevailing policies that we've actually seen some of the African countries implementing, and actually trying to stimulate local production. I think the thinking here is that you want to stimulate local production with the aim of targeting your exports, and in the same vein, you're also catering to your high unemployment in this. At the end of the day, I think you have to put it in the context that government has to play a significant role in actually enabling a more conducive operating environment for our businesses. We've actually seen in the U.S., they've actually lowered the corporate tax rate. For some companies, they were paying as much as 38%, and they're now paying close to 24%. So I think, in my view, it's more on a stimulation type of approach to actually help with unemployment, one, and to also focus on the exports of the country.
To get back to you, Maher Jakut, in studio, something that is of concern to us, and all of us are talking here from Cape Town. The minister mentioned 7 billion rand for drought relief. Drought stands to affect us quite severely in the Western Cape. But what do you make of the fact that at least we've had some kind of commitment from national government on drought?
Yeah, I think it's their responsibility. I think that the national government is responsible for the supply of water to their municipalities. And I was on a call yesterday with Justice Malala, and the national government needs to make sure that that the municipalities can run and run effectively, and I think that coming up with the election in 2019, they could be the knight in shining armor.
Indeed, Abdulaziz, what do you make of this allocation for drought relief? There's been a lot of controversy surrounding it. Where what has not and what hasn't been done. But I mean, What do you make of it? Do you think this is enough money to help the problem?
Yeah, I think a lot of that drought relief is actually not aimed at the man in the street. It's actually more for the probably the farming community, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see the drought relief in the context of the $125 billion that they're allocating to water infrastructure, the reality is that since 1994, we've actually seen a reallocation of our budget. We clearly, there's been a greater focus on social spending and less of a focus on infrastructure spending. So I think that there's actually a big positive potential here that if we start going to spend on, you know, the leaking taps and the leaking pipes, et cetera, where that $125 billion is aimed for, you can have a massive positive sort of outcome in terms of you know, less consumption of water. But not only that, there's ancillary jobs that can be created. A lot of the maintenance that was skipped over the last couple of years can return as well. So I think the man in the street and we as consumers who are most affected here in the Western Cape, we might not see the immediate benefit of that drought relief, but I do think that there would be positive economic benefits to that spending as well.
Munyo, would you agree with these perceptions that at least government is now taking an interest in the drought situation, which a lot of people felt it should have done years ago?
Yes, I do. I think one of the areas that we can actually link to this discussion is that we've actually seen a lot of change in climatic conditions across the globe, and it's not only a South African phenomenon. And I think in this budget, we've actually heard the minister also pointing to the fact that they will be introducing sort of like a pollution tariff. In my view, that's actually sending a clear message that from now on they should probably be paying more attention to sort of the climatic shift that we've seen in the global environment. And I think we also have to be cognizant that it's most likely not to be a once-off phenomenon. It's something that we'll probably have to deal with as a new challenge going forward.
Musa, to get back to tax issues, the minister explicitly said that in 2019 the country's looking at a draft carbon tax bill. How much money do you think government can make from a carbon tax, seeing that ironically we are one of the biggest air polluters on the continent?
It's difficult to put a number to that. It hasn't worked in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I think the intention behind it is obviously good. As Munya mentioned now, you know, with climate change and those things, and as a deterrent to sort of contributing to global warming and other factors, you know, this is just a step in the right direction. But to actually put a number on that would be extremely difficult at this point.
Gentlemen, we are beginning to run out of time, so I'm going to whip around and allow each of you to have a final say without me asking a question, because there's probably lots of issues you wanted to talk about, but the silly journalist didn't ask the questions. Mahir, I'm going to start off with you.
Okay, so I'm just going to give you a summary from what I took out of here. So the budget that was released today, I think the future appears promising, and implementation will be key. I think there's definitely a renewed confidence, and I think that this will drive private investment. Definitely a change in political direction has lifted the confidence, and I think that on a whole, a balanced, good budget.
Right. Abdul Aziz Davids, your take.
Yeah, I think if I can add a bit of color to that, one of the key features for us is always how do you manage the outer years? And one of the big issues for us is that your budget deficit, so the difference between your expenditure and your income, that is shrinking. So we're starting off at over 4%, 4.3% in the current financial period, and that's expected to shrink to around 3.5%. So it does mean that government is looking to rein in this almost rampant expenditure that we've seen over during the last 9 years of the Zuma era. I think a key feature of our budget, however, is still, and our overriding concern, is that the makeup of expenditure is still very much towards social spending,
And if you look at very good budgets across developed countries, for example, if you can tilt your budget towards more an infrastructure or growth-led sort of budget that can actually be used to accelerate economic growth, then you're on a winning path. And unfortunately, at this stage still, our budget is much more favored towards social spending. So we've got a shrinking income base in terms of, you know, the number of taxpayers supporting that income. And yet, a lot of our expenditure is diverted towards social spending. And it's, I mean, there's nothing wrong with social grants, etc., but it's really not going to be that accelerator in terms of the multiplier effect in terms of future economic growth. Once we get to that level, I think then we can see a meaningful pickup in GDP and in economic growth, and we can do justice to that 4% GDP growth. That is our destiny, I think.
And Munya, your final takeaway, maybe something that you wanted to mention that you just weren't able to.
I think it would just be sort of like a conclusion. I think from a rating perspective, from an investor perspective, I think everybody was looking at can the tough decisions be taken. And I think that we've actually seen with the increase in VAT that some tough decisions had actually had been taken. And then the second point would be on, is this the start of a new dawn? And I think that the minister tried to create a bit of confidence for both labor and business going forward. But I think a lot still needs to be done. They still need for us to focus on the SOE, and a lot more also still need to be done in terms of actually creating job opportunities. So as a first step for this new administration, I think it sends the right signal to all the market players, and hopefully it will be a stepping stone for the years to come.
And Musa, your final take on all of this?
Yeah, I think as the minister said, it was a tough but hopeful budget. The balance, I think, that, you know, that they've tried to achieve, they succeeded by and large in doing that. We do need to, you know, as a country, we do need to stimulate economic growth and investor confidence so that we, you know, revenue is generated from that rather than the continuous upward trajectory of increased taxes.
And on that note, we end this part of our Voice of the Cape Drive Time special. A special thanks to our experts in studio and online, Mahir Jakut, investment analyst, Old Mutual Al Baraka Equity Fund, Abdulaziz Davids, head of research, Kagiso Asset Management, Munya Chona, investment analyst at Oasis, Musa Akodia, legal compliance and tax expert at Oasis. Gentlemen, thank you for your time, thank you for your expertise, and let's hope that our future will be as prosperous as the minister promised us. Shukran, thanks a lot. Time now for Asr on Voice of the Cape Drive Time.